This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Nothing is off limits as host Sophia Franklin dishes on her personal life, like toxic relationships, dating and hookups, and dealing with insecurities. All with humor and real talk. Find Sophia with an F on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go.
Jake and Josh are here
to analyze the game they love
for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh House.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of another Dolphins podcast. Tua Tagovailoa is still perfect against the New England Patriots following a 34-15 win at Hard Rock Stadium. Joining me to share some instant reactions to Miami's third straight win is Eric Smith, an offensive line guru and contributor for Five Reasons Sports. Coach, let me be among the first to wish you a happy Victory Monday.
Thank you. Same to you. Definitely makes the weeks a little easier when you have convincing wins that you can review rather than trying to find out what went wrong in a game.
You are not kidding. And we were talking for a brief minute before the show, and this is the first time this season, this Miami Dolphins offense, it's been so high-powered since Mike McDaniel arrived in Miami, but for the first time in the 2024 season, we actually got to look up and see the Dolphins just running away from a football game. They were up 24-0 in the second quarter. They were up 31-0 in the third quarter. Got a little queasy at some points in there, but overall, very sound performance.
Yeah, it was definitely relieving. Even the first drive, like they kind of started out slow. I think it was a 3-and-out, the first offensive drive for the Dolphins, and you start thinking, like, is this going to be that trap-type game where we're fighting and clawing the whole way through? But thankfully, quickly after that, the defense got a good stand after that, and the offense kicked into gear, and it just seemed like whatever the offense, and specifically Tua, wanted to do, that they were going to do all day against that New England defense.
I'm glad you brought that up because this was such a turn of the tape after last week's performance, where I think the Raiders only had the ball twice in the first half. Yeah. They started their second possession where there was still 10 minutes left in the first quarter. Very, very different ball game. But I mean, one consistent for the Dolphins since he returned to the lineup is quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. He carved up the New England Patriots defense with 317 yards and 4 passing touchdowns. Coach, it's really hard to really talk about a passing chart. It's really a visual tool. But man, I think what was so impressive about this performance from Tua was he was looking all over the field, finding the open guy against a Patriots defense that was really stubborn and wanted to play a man defense for a lot of the day.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the different ways that he, there was a lot of screens, which is something we complained about early in the season, but, here we are and the other stuff is working, so the screen game is more of a complement to that type of stuff. And then, Janu still had a big game from him, and then you saw Waddle finally break out and have the game that we've all been waiting for. And then you had the great opportunity for the deep shot to Odell to the left side there that he, got jammed up a little bit, had to dive, end up dropping. But, that's the type of play that could be a 70-yard touchdown in the future. So, you saw him accessing all different parts of the field, and that was definitely refreshing to be able to see that again.
It was so relieving to see Jalen Waddle just look like a flat-out number one wide receiver. One thing I've always preached about Waddle is that you have two 1A wide receivers and you're not going to have them both on every game, but it always seems like those matchups against the AFC East, Jalen Waddle is someone you can rely on. He caught 8 of 9 targets for 144 yards and a touchdown, skying through the air to catch a couple passes. But I think the biggest thing, and I buried the lead here, we're 3 minutes and 20 seconds into this podcast, so I'm yet to ask it, but are we not waddling anymore? We saw Jalen Waddle score a touchdown, I think it was, for the second time in 2 weeks or second time in the last few weeks, and it's another game without a Waddle, and that's a little outrageous to me.
Yeah, I was surprised by that as well. I think the first time that I noticed that, I think that he, you know, he might have gotten a little dinged up a couple plays before that, and I thought that maybe that had something to do with it, but I didn't see any point that he seemed to be limping the day he didn't do it, so I'm not sure what's going on there. I hope that does come back.
Man, I so hope so, because we'll talk about him a little bit later, but we have two probably the coolest celebrations in the NFL right now. We have the chop and we have Waddle.
Absolutely.
I mean, scenarios where you could just have one word perfectly describe a celebration. It's so great. You mentioned Jonnu Smith. He caught 9 of 11 receptions for 9 of 11 targets, for 87 yards and a touchdown. Something that stood out about this game was Miami's inability to run the football. But when Tua and the passing offense is moving the ball like this, and you mentioned the screens where those can kind of be, it's kind of a broken record at this point, but those type of passes are extensions of the running game. You saw that the Miami Dolphins, even when the Patriots are focusing in on like, all right, let's limit Tyreek Hill to 6 targets. Let's make sure Devon Achane doesn't kill us on the ground. The Dolphins still have a lot of different answers where they can just pile on points.
Yeah, so you know, you talk about complementary football between the offense and the defense and the special teams, but that exists within those units too, and that's what you're seeing with the offense. I mean, this offense has traditionally been that big play down the field type thing, and we see teams adjusting to that. They're not giving that up. So you saw the running game really taking off, and now – you know, and one of the adjustments to the offense in the past was that, you know, I think it was the 49ers were one of the first teams that really started playing their linebackers a little further back to take away those deep in and dig routes. And that's what opens up the running game, right? So now you have teams that are still trying to keep a lid on the deep passing game, but now they're, you know, contributing more guys into the run game. Well, now we're seeing the digs and, you know, Waddle hitting the digs, you're seeing Janu going over the middle, hitting that stuff. And that's the type of stuff that opens up. Again, complementary levels to that offense. And going forward, you know, teams are going to have to decide which one they want to give up. Like, are they going to, you know, go back to letting them run the ball, having those linebackers sit back further to take that stuff out and letting the Dolphins run the ball? Or are we finally going to get a team that says, you know, we've seen the Dolphins run the ball this year. We've seen them, you know, destroy the last couple of teams over the middle with the ball. You know, it's time to just take our chances and hope that Tua can't hit the deep pass and bring it back, you know, bring it back to what we used to see against the Dolphins. So it'll be interesting to see going forward how defenses adjust to that. But I think that, you know, having the offense that has all of those different answers and a quarterback that really has the ability to get to any of that as well. We're seeing Tua play at a really high level that, you know, there's probably been some of those shot plays called and they're not there, but Tua's not forcing anything, right? If those guys are being run off by Waddle and Hill, then something's going to open up underneath, whether it's Janu Smith against a linebacker over the middle. We've seen him dumping it off to Achane, you know, on the swing routes there, what they scored on today with that. So, you know, having the answers from a personnel perspective and a quarterback that can really, you know, choreograph all that, makes it a tough offense to stop right now.
And I think what's so relieving about watching it all come together for this Miami Dolphins offense is that it's just happening, right? I think in years past, we saw scenarios where it was like a ball just dropped off Tanner Connor's hands. We saw it. We saw the vision of what this offense is trying to do. We saw Jeff Wilson have that hole, but an ankle tackle is just the difference in a 15-yard gain compared to a 30-yard gain. How do you see this offense moving forward? I hate to keep looking ahead, but this has been a unique stretch for the Dolphins because they faced a Patriots team that last week faced the Rams. I know that Sean McVay, and they're going to do things a little bit differently, but the foundation is the same of that Kyle Shanahan system. We saw the Patriots do things a little bit differently from a week ago, where they had Christian Gonzalez actually following around Tyreek Hill for a lot of the game, and I thought he did pretty well. But as we start to peek ahead to Thanksgiving night against the Green Bay Packers, Matt LaFleur, another coach that knows this offensive system so well. So we've had a couple of games where Jonnu Smith has really been a solid and sound part of this passing attack. Is this something that the Dolphins are going to be able to stick with, or is this going to be a game where we see that next chess move where it's LaFleur knowing what Mike McDaniel is feeling pretty good about right now?
I mean, I can't sit here today and say that I have a good feeling of what the Dolphins are going to do, because I think that, like I said, that's going to depend on the way that the Packers decide to defend that. If I was playing against the Dolphins right now, you know, I'd probably, you know, try to hope that my front four was better than the Dolphins five offensive linemen, and let the run game, you know, be the thing that you give them, right? Don't give them the deep ball. Don't give them Janu over the middle. Let them run the ball. Hopefully you can get them in a third and long situation. Will that be what they do? I don't know, because, you know, like you said, LaFleur comes from the same line that McDaniel does, so he knows what Mike McDaniel is going to want to do in the running game. He's going to have a good idea of what teams have done in the past to stop that. You know, you could see LaFleur doing a better job of helping his defense to align in ways that will – you know, try to influence McDaniel to call a game a certain way. But that's where I think that, you know, the evolution of Tua comes in, that even if that play call that comes in is not there, then, you know, you can see Tua having the freedom at the line to be able to make those changes, check out of plays, and react to what is on the field. So I guess short answer, I don't know. Hopefully we continue to see that whatever the defense gives them, that the Dolphins are able to produce answers to that in different ways, whether that's, you know, hitting the deep ball, hitting the intermediate routes, or seeing the running game resurface again.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Tua deserves just so much credit for this performance, because the Dolphins were consistently moving the ball with a rushing attack that was averaging less than 3 yards per carry. And it wasn't those long shots like that Baltimore Ravens game a few years ago. Right. Jalen Waddle, his long was 29. Tyreek Hill, his long was 20. Jonnu Smith, 14. It was that cliche dink and dunking down the field with this Miami Dolphins offense. You know, you haven't really had a good chance to dig into the film hit here and really look at what happened against the Patriots. I know when you're facing a division rival, someone you've faced in the past, things always get a little bit different. Why do you think the Dolphins were struggling to run the football against a Patriots defense that was allowing an average of about 128 yards per game on the ground?
I mean, I think that we're probably going to see that the linebackers are probably more aggressive in the run fits than what we saw earlier in the season. You know, part of what makes that outside zone so successful is that, you know, you get those combo blocks, and if the linebackers are hesitant, then it gives you the ability to stay on those double teams longer before you're leaving to get the linebacker, and gives the backs a little more time to read the way those blocks are setting up. So I think that when we, you know, dive into the film, when we start looking at that, I think we're going to see that the Patriots linebackers were probably more aggressive in filling those run lanes, and that's what opened up the stuff, you know, to Jalen Waddle in more of those intermediate routes.
that makes sense. I love just seeing the push and pull really working in Miami's favor. And you need a coach who is able to pull all the levers and really understand when to call the right plays. Very impressive performance from this Miami Dolphins defense. They held the Patriots scoreless for three quarters. We don't even have to talk about the fourth quarter if you don't want to. I'm sure I don't want to. What really stuck out to you about this unit?
So, I mean, obviously, anytime you jump out to a big lead in a game, it really changes the way that the defense is able to play. I mean, you saw that when the Dolphins played the Bills the first time and they fell behind early, and how bad the Dolphins' offensive line looked in that game. You saw the same thing today against the Patriots. I mean, the Patriots don't have a good offensive line, but when you get them into a one-dimensional situation, it's going to compound that. But one of the things that really stood out to me today was that throughout the game, once they got into pass rush situations, that, you know, Weaver didn't have to manufacture pressures. We didn't have to, you know, run twists and blitzes. And, you know, you did see Jalen Ramsey coming off the edge, but it wasn't as prevalent as it was when you go back to, let's say, the Colts game, I don't think. Instead, what you were seeing was that, you know, they were literally taking almost the entire defensive line and moving them to one side. And then you've got Chop Robinson out here in like the widest nine possible, getting a full sprint in a tackle. And he's basically got, you know, a 10-yard wide window to defend. And that, you know, is almost impossible for most offensive tackles. So it was neat to see that development, that, you know, instead of just lining up four and hoping that one of them can get home, that Weaver has enough trust in Robinson that that's the guy that he's isolating and just letting him off the leash to rush.
I think he had 1.5 sacks. He also got a forced a penalty to be called. And I think the most impressive part about all of this is I don't think that the Miami Dolphins have had like year-long tackling issues, but they've gone through spurts where they will definitely bounce off a receiver or two. Nothing was more relieving than not only seeing Chop Robinson absolutely torch a left tackle, but he was able to take down 6'4", 225-pound Drake May without him being able to wiggle out of the pocket. I mean, for so long, we were under the impression of the Dolphins signed, drafted Jalen Phillips and signed Bradley Chubb so you could have these big physical, these monsters at defensive end to bring down guys like Josh Allen. But I mean, what a performance from Chop Robinson. I was begging him to be more than just that PFF darling, which is great. I know he wasn't expected to come in here and be a starter day one, but I mean, those 1.5 sacks, the penalty, those are game-changing plays. And when you have a sound secondary led by Jalen Ramsey that will only look better when Kendall Fuller is back in the mix, that's an absolute game-changer when you aren't really revealing all the different unique blitzes and things you can use when you actually need them.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of funny because that is the first time today that I have heard Kendall Fuller's name mentioned. And, that, you know, that goes a long way to the depth that they've built. You know, when you're playing an entire game and you have a guy named Storm Duck that's out there playing corner, right? Or Cam Smith, who everybody, you know, declared as a bust last year, and you're still able to play well, you know, and, you know, you talk about the depth on the defensive line, same idea there, right? You got Tyus Bowser that's playing meaningful snaps, Quentin Bell, you know, I don't think he had any big stat type plays, but he was visible in his pass rush and his pursuit today. And then you had Anthony Walker go down and you put somebody in that, you know, might end up being better in Terrell Dodson, you know, if Walker's out for a long period. So that defense, the depth that they've built on the defense has been huge this year.
Dodson too comes away with his first interception with the Miami Dolphins. And I think the best part about seeing this game unfold is because the Dolphins, Chop Robinson has been awesome. I don't think their pass rush is still where they want it to be. But when you're up 24 points, like that's kind of like a simulated pass rush in a sense because you're working against the clock. So it was nice to see them make May uncomfortable and go three quarters without giving up points. Another name I wanted to just bring up real quick, Zach Sealer, 2 tackles for a loss. Coach, anybody else on that defense stick out to you? Obviously, I think there were just some big-time plays that really changed things. Otherwise, I thought the Pats did an okay job moving the football, but obviously you get into the red zone, you can't make a play, and you wipe away anything else that happened before.
No, Zach Sealer was the other name that I was going to bring up. I mean, you know, when you talk about a guy that plays the number of snaps that he does and is still able to play at the level that he does, I mean, that play that he had in the second half where he just ran through the offensive lineman in the second half there, like that is, you know, Weaver talks about uncommon effort, and that's exactly what that was. Jalen Ramsey, like every week, had a huge game once again. You know, outside of that, I think it was just a lot of role players doing their job. You know, it wasn't that anybody necessarily stood out so much as that, you know, there wasn't that guy that you just saw getting beat over and over again. I mean, in the past, you see certain guys come on the field and you're like, holy crap, like they're about to throw it to that guy. They're about to run right at that guy. And you can almost chalk it up as a loss. But, you know, the amount of role players that they've gathered who are playing meaningful snaps and playing well in those snaps is really impressive that there's, you know, not anybody that I can think of, you know, outside of maybe Jordan Poyer that, you know, we're putting out there and you just know something bad is going to happen. And that says a lot about the depth out there.
And even with that, the coaches love to credit Poyer just for the communication he brings to the team, especially in the secondary. He had some ugly plays in the first half, but I think in the second half he had a pass breakup and a sound tackle where you're able to kind of reel it back and be like, all right, we can kind of let this slide and let it go just because the Dolphins defense as a whole is playing so well. Some news broke before the game. I wouldn't really call it news, but earlier today we learned that Calais Campbell was nearly traded to the Baltimore Ravens for a 2026 fifth-round pick. So before we take off, I wanted to get your thoughts on that and Miami's decision to ultimately hold on to him. I don't know if people have heard the whole story, but NFL Network's Ian Rappaport basically reported that the Dolphins were pretty much ready to trade Campbell for a 2026 fifth-round pick, and then Mike McDaniel stepped in and said, you're too important to us. We think you're too valuable. And it kind of sounds like they talked things out, and if Campbell wanted to go, the Dolphins would have been cool with that. But it seemed like McDaniel kind of won over Campbell, saying that, hey, we have a chance to still do something special here, and we want you to be a part of it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously I've probably only seen about as much as you have, or maybe even less than that. But I saw similar stuff, and it was probably a situation where, you know, Campbell did the Dolphins a favor by coming here on the contract that he did. I mean, he's already said that, you know, he had opportunities to play other places for more money. So, you know, when the season was going the way that it was, you know, the Dolphins probably owed it to Campbell to at least put some feelers out there and see what options were out there and, you know, give him the opportunity to go play somewhere else. Cause, you know, he said, you know, if it was today or sometime recently, that the only reason he's here, he's chasing a ring, right? That's the only reason he wants to be here. So if he did the Dolphins a favor by taking less money to come here to chase a ring and that, you know, things were just completely falling apart, then the Dolphins probably owed it to him to shop around and see what options there were. And, you know, today on the broadcast, they were talking about, you know, that conversation between Calais and McDaniel. And like you said, you know, sounds like McDaniel won him over, convinced Calais that, you know, that there's still a lot of season left and there's still a good chance that the Dolphins could turn around and that they felt that he was a big part of that. You know, I'm glad that they did. I think that, you know, regardless of how this season ends up, he's been a big piece of the way that, you know, that the defense has developed this year. You know, obviously he's, you know, on the field replacing Wilkins has been a huge piece of the puzzle, but, you know, I think the leadership that he has brought, you know, it's probably a big reason that we're sitting here and able to talk about getting to 500 this week, as opposed to just flushing the entire season down the drain. So I'm glad that they did not accept that. You know, I had some doubts about McDaniel a few times now that, you know, when things have started to fall apart, like McDaniel kind of has that quirky personality, you know, and, you know, if you've been in a locker room, like a lot of times that doesn't go over well. You know, that's only, it's good until it's not. And then, you know, then things fall apart. And, you know, earlier this season and before, you know, I'm kind of sitting here thinking, like, are we on the edge there where, you know, those alphas in the locker room are tired of this guy and, you know, everybody's just going to go their own way, especially the way the Dolphins have constructed this locker room. There's some really strong personalities in there. But McDaniel has found a way to pass with flying colors every time that's happened. And, you know, this bounce back to almost 500 is another example of that, being able to convince Calais Campbell to, you know, that staying here is not only in the best interest of the Dolphins, but in the best interest of Campbell, right? That's just another feather in the cap for McDaniel in that leadership aspect that, you know, sometimes is hard to see with him.
That's so perfectly said, man, because I think that, like, the Dolphins have two different three-game losing streaks this season. Calais Campbell is in his 18th season in the NFL. This man is 38 years old. Being able to win him over someone who's seen so much football, I think McDaniel even came out and said he played, it might have been high school or college ball.
Yeah, played high school, Campbell. Yeah.
Mind-blowing to me. To be able to win over someone like that who knows so much about football is so impressive. And this is a little bit of my fandom taking over, but I think about this from the shoes of Chris Greer. Calais Campbell is 38 years old and he's on a one-year contract. Those are so important notes to keep in mind when you talk about trading him. Yep. This is also someone who leads the Dolphins in tackles for a loss, in sacks, and in batted balls, in passes defended.
Wow.
Even if Miami didn't win the last three games, I'm not sure I'd be able to stomach trading him for a fifth-round pick 2 years in the future. I'm not sure I'd look at Chris Greer and say, man, that was such a great deal, and be happy about that. I'd probably be upset about that even if Miami didn't win another game this year. I know that'd be a disservice to Campbell, and I'd be able to talk myself through it in that scenario, but just looking at the return for someone who's playing so damn well, no.
Yeah, agree. You know, like you said, it would be a service to Campbell to be able to do that and for the Dolphins to be able to get something. But, you know, if you're looking at whether a fifth-round pick 2 years down the road is worth what Campbell can give to the team, there's no way that's equal value.
And what are your thoughts on the idea that McDaniel has – we don't know everything, and that's really important with all this. But the way this kind of works, the idea of McDaniel and Greer going back and forth, and McDaniel kind of sounding like he has that trump card, does that make you – feel a little confident moving forward, or what is that? Did learning any of this change your thoughts about the dynamic of Greer and McDaniel moving forward?
I didn't get the sense that McDaniel had a trump card in that thing. I feel like it was more of Campbell's decision, you know, to tell That's Mike that he wanted to stay. I don't know that, you know, Greer has always been the reputation of a coach pleaser, right? Usually if a coach wants something, you know, Skylar Thompson, I feel like, is a great example of that. You know, if a coach wants something, Greer is probably going to give it to him. So, you know, in an example like that, I feel like it was, you know, probably the team saying, yes, we owe it to Campbell to go out there and shop. And Greer coming back and saying, you know, hey, this is what we got. You know, there may be worse teams that were giving better offers, right? But if Campbell wants the opportunity to play for a ring, you know, I can send him to Baltimore. I can get a fifth round pick 2 years from now. And, you know, he probably went and talked to Mike about that. And then, you know, that may have been where Mike was like, hey, let me talk to Calais. And then that conversation happened. And, you know, probably coming out of that conversation is where, you know, I don't know that if Greer wanted to pull off that trade, I don't know that there was anything preventing him from doing it. But I think that, you know, the opinions of probably mostly Calais, but also Mike, was enough that Greer's like, yeah, like that's not good value. It's not like, you know, somebody was offering a second round pick next year for him. You know, so I think that in that type of situation, I think that Greer probably defaulted to whatever the coach wanted, which, you know, probably came from what the player wanted in this unique scenario.
It's a great point. Thank you for talking that out. That actually makes a lot of sense. At OL Coach Smith 63 on X. Eric, I appreciate you so much for taking the time to join. There are some moving pieces still going on. We're recording this Sunday afternoon. The Texans did lose to the Titans. We need every team in the AFC to lose. The Broncos are still playing. That's the other game we're really keeping our eye on. Miami leapfrogged the Colts, but ignoring all the other games, Dolphins coming off this 34-15 win over the New England Patriots. A very, very quick turnaround Thanksgiving night against the Green Bay Packers. How you feeling?
I like it. I mean, like I said, you know, they've been playing very well these past few weeks. You know, I like the way that they've been, you know, developing, like I said, those different layers of the offense. So it's not like we're coming in and just saying that Tua's been throwing the ball on the field and that's what we're expecting him to do. It's that, you know, I have confidence in the ability of the offense to take what the defense is giving them. You know, obviously, you know, some big narratives that the Dolphins have a chance to, you know, move in the right direction for the Dolphins in terms of playing on the road, playing on a short week, primetime television, good team, all that stuff. So, you know, not expecting a blowout by any means, but I do feel good about the Dolphins' chances to go up there and come back with a victory.
Perfectly said, and you better check your pulse if you are not fired up. Thank you all so much for listening to another Dolphins podcast. Go out there, enjoy Victory Monday. We will be back soon to preview Packers-Dolphins on Thanksgiving. But until then, fins up.